Welcome, everybody, to Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and this evening we begin a special series of episodes. The What You're Reading shows for the start of 2017 begin here tonight. On this episode, I get to catch up with our old pal Josh Calandros and find out what exactly he's been keeping up with in the realm of comics. Is he still the Marvel man he was 6 months ago, or has he decided to give DC another shot? What are his thoughts on Marvel's Civil War II, the constant barrage of number one issues, and DC's television universe? All this and much more are touched on tonight, so join us. Don't forget to also give that Rattlichem Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. You can join us at your convenience on blogtalkradio.com, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or iTunes. Just search Rattlichem to subscribe to the network that Source Material is a part of. If you would like to follow me on Twitter, you can do so by finding me at Stiznarky. Also, the show's Twitter is at SourceMatCast. All right, folks, let's get this underway. Josh, what you reading? And here we go. All right, man. So, Josh Calandros, welcome back to Source Material, my friend. I'm glad you got to get on here. First person I get to talk to for this go-round of what you're reading for 2017. From what I remember last time when we spoke, you were just getting into Squirrel Girl, I think. I remember calling you a DC guy, but that wasn't the case at the time. You were definitely, all it was nothing but Marvel on your pull list.
Yeah, I mean, most of my life I've been pretty much, I'd say the entirety of my comic book reading life has basically been like 90% Marvel.
Yeah.
And the majority of that remaining 10%, just between Marvel and DC, like I've got independent books and stuff too, but just between those two, it's definitely like a 90-10 over my whole life. And that 10% of DC is probably like 9.5%. The vast majority of that 10% was Green Lantern during the Geoff Johns run from what, early 2000s up to, I don't know, like late 2000s, I think. He was on it for a long time. I had the vast majority of that run up until New 52 or whatever the event was before New 52. Like I jumped off DC to get at all completely well before New 52. It was just crazy. It's just like there's a new event every 9 to 15 months, and it completely resets everything. So at this point, as a reader, why would I try anything new if it's not going to last for 9 months and then none of it really mattered whenever it's all retcon? I'm actually reading a DC book now, which we'll get into a little bit later.
Let me ask you this. You still reading Squirrel Girl?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I think whenever we were talking, I wasn't just getting into Squirrel. I was actually just getting into the second volume, I guess, whenever Secret War had reset the numbering or something like that. I think it was on all their titles.
Mm-hmm.
And so the joke for their number one of that volume two is that it's their second number one of the year. But yeah, I'm definitely still reading Squirrel Girl. I can't see anything that would really ever change that aside from some change in their creative team.
Yeah, I was going to say their creative team stayed the same. They haven't changed. Nobody, still Ryan North.
Yeah, still Ryan North. And I think it's Aaron Henderson.
Oh, we
can't remember. It's Henderson. But yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, it's the same art style.
Erica.
So it's the same art style in general. I'm not big on the art, but over time, like it's really grown on me and it kind of matches the feel of it. Like it wouldn't really feel the same if it was different now.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, I think that's kind of a good segue into one of these titles in particular, because, you know, from some of our past podcasts, like I've always given you all a lot of hell about Archie Comics, because to be completely honest, it was really just kind of a running joke for me, simply because I don't know anything about the whole Archie universe. And on the surface, it just looks like it's about a bunch of high school kids in the 50s talking around the malt shop about the prom. And I don't really care.
Yeah.
You know, like,
oh, I hear you, dude.
But found out that Chip Zdarsky and Erica Henderson did the entire run for the first volume of Jughead. And so I bought the first volume of Jughead off of In-Stock Trades, which I think I've plugged on your site before. And I know that you all, I know that you and our partner podcast folks don't really get anything from them, but I sing their praises all the time. Like it's a flawless deal. All the trades on there are great, mm-hmm. but I got the first volume of Jughead, which is the first 6 issues, and it's a blast.
Yeah.
Like it's a ton of fun. It's basically just Jughead being Jughead, and It's got a really strong, it's the exact same kind of comedy feel as the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl books. And there's an overarching story going on throughout the whole thing. But in every issue, he has like an actual dream sequence or a daydream sequence where whatever is actually going on in the book is translated through some weird dream where he's like a robot or a pirate or a caveman or something. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's really good.
Now, Zdarsky, you've mentioned him before on here. What do you know him from?
So Chip Zdarsky, I knew him a lot from, he wrote Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
That was an ongoing, and I think I talked about that during our last What You're Reading, and that is unfortunately ended now. They're not doing the Howard the Duck run. That's done.
Mm-hmm.
But Chip Zdarsky wrote Howard the Duck, and he also writes Sex Criminals, which is an Image book.
Ooh, is that that's got to be different compared to what he's writing or what he wrote for Howard the Duck.
It kind of is. I mean, it's not. I mean, there's sexuality in it, but it's still the exact. It's still a really similar comedy. Comedy feel. Yeah, it's a very funny book.
Hmm.
And in that book, and I'm still reading that through trade form. And in that book, there's a couple of main characters that basically find that they have superpowers whenever they orgasm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like they get into all these weird, like they can stop time basically whenever that happens, and they end up robbing banks to save a library, and it's actually really, really fun. But between him and the fact that Erica Henderson was doing the art for it was like the writer for one of the books I really loved and the artist for another book that I really loved was like, there's really no reason for me not to try this. And it worked out really well. It was a good gamble for me.
Awesome. Are you going to catch Riverdale when it comes on CW? I think we talked about this on Screaming Boy, but
you know, I don't know. I need to read more about who the creative team is for that, because for me, general rule of thumb for me is that whole WB CW shows are really not my thing, because they're typically more like Dawson's Creek team.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of intrigued.
Not
by
my bag either.
Right, right. But at the same time, like, all those DC shows are really good.
Yep.
So I really want to read up more about Riverdale. I'll probably wait till it's like 6 or 7 or 8 episodes in or something like that and see what the general feel is on it. And then maybe I'll go back and check it out.
This is the time where I really wish time travel was possible, because I would take this interview that we're having right here, right now, these last 10 minutes. And send them back 2 years and say, give this to Josh Calandra.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's, you know, like that's really the great thing for me is for trades, because I don't have to go to the comic. Like if it was a really successful series, mm-hmm. then I don't have to go back and pay $15 for the number one and $9 for the number two and $7 for the number three and all that garbage. I can just spend the first trade of Jughead on the cover price is $20, but right now in stock has it for $14. So I spent $14 on 6 comics, basically.
Yeah,
so that's solid.
Can't cry about that at all. Hell no.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the first one that I was reading. I'm actually just pulled up my last in-stock trade order, and the vast majority of these are just like the latest volumes of what we talked about before: Saga, East of West, Black Science. But I did buy the Omega Men trade, which is actually a DC title. So that was the first DC title or collected book that I bought in probably 8 years.
Okay, help me out with the concept of Omega Men first off, before we get into like any of the creative team. What in the world are they?
It was really hard for me to follow the first. It's a 12-issue trade, and it was really hard. The first 3, 4, 5 issues were a steep learning curve for me, almost certainly because I've just been out of sight of DC for so long, and this is the DC's like expected the DC's space type stuff.
Okay.
So it's in the same vein as like Marvel's space stuff. Like if you're a big Marvel fan, odds are you don't really know a whole lot about the space stuff, like the Kree-Skrull War. Yeah, all the cosmic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's typically kind of like tertiary at best in terms of like Marvel lore. And mm-hmm. I didn't know any of the characters or anything that was going on, except the central character in all of it is Kyle Rayner, the previous Green
yeah.
Lantern,
mm-hmm.
who is now the White Lantern, which was pretty much the last really major story arc in Green Lantern that I read, was like all the different colors against the Black Lanterns, and then the white one was kind of the one that saved the day. But I won't get into the whole storyline, because it's actually almost it's this intergalactic pseudo-political thriller conspiracy type plot that there's no way I'm going to take the time to really explain. But the primary reason that I picked it up is that Tom King wrote it.
Oh, and yeah.
From all the other podcasts that we've done where I've basically made it, the Vision show, I take every opportunity I can to brag about that. And I won't talk about it too much more on this one because the series is over. But he wrote that. I've always been a huge Avengers West Coast fan. And for the Vision, he went back to the Avengers West Coast stories in the 80s. And it was amazing. It's probably one of my top three favorite story arcs, like, of all time.
Wow.
And from the point, I'd say about 2/3 through the Vision series, I vowed that anything Tom King writes, like, I'm going to buy. And so I went back and bought the Omega Men trade. And like I said, it was a pretty steep learning curve for me, but I didn't really hold that accountable to the creative team on this as much as it was just my lack of knowledge of DC for so long.
Sure.
But it was really cool in the end. I'm going to go back and read through it again to see what maybe if I can kind of pick up on some of the stuff I missed the first time around. But that was really cool. It was worth it. And then Tom King, I'm not picking this up yet, but this past week, Tom King is currently writing the mainstream Batman book for DC.
Oh, yeah.
The Rebirth, since Rebirth, and the first volume of that just came out. So I'm going to buy that and probably just start picking up individual issues, and maybe I'll probably end up buying the first two or three trades of that, and then probably buy individual issues and keep that on my pull list going forward, just because, one, Tom King and the folks at my local shop said that the Batman titles now are not the way they were back whenever I was reading them in the 90s, when you couldn't buy just one Batman book. You had to buy all six every month.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell is going on? And that's garbage, dude.
I hear you, dude.
I'm of the opinion that approach is a double-edged sword, and it depends on what your goals are. Because if you want to cater to the hardcore fans that are just absolutely rabid for that character, that title, whatever, it's a home run. Like, they'll buy all of them, and you'll probably develop a really solid, multi-layered story. The caveat is that you're not going to get any new readers because nobody wants to drop $40 or $50 a month just to read about Batman.
Yeah, and imagine
it's too much, man.
Imagine popping into the middle of one of those stories.
Exactly.
You're just going to be like, well, I don't want to. That would scare me away from it. It scares people away from it now.
Yeah,
we don't have that going on a whole lot because they want to start with a number one issue, or they want to start at the ground floor. But shoot, back in the day when you had, if you stepped in the middle of Return of Superman, of luck. And, and you hadn't picked up the book in like 3 or 4 years. Just imagine being off that book for like 2 years, still coming into it. You'd have no idea why is this guy?
It's too much.
It is.
I mean, I'm of the opinion, like I said, it just depends on what approach that the creative team for DC and whatever that title happens to be is. And I think that works for a story arc.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that consistently for like a 2 year period. Otherwise, you will reestablish whatever your ground level readership is, and you'll never increase from there.
Yeah,
your sales numbers. You know, I mean, you're never going to bring in new readers that way, in my opinion. I'm not in the business, so maybe there's data that shows that's completely wrong. But whatever.
I think the whole market scheme or whatever, trying to get new readers, there's so many different strategies that companies employ to try and bring people in. And the 90s were horrible about gimmicks.
Yeah.
And you had that. So I think it's an evolving thing. Tom King. So was there something else you said you were going to get a hold of that he done other than the Batman?
Just the Batman. That's all I'm aware of right now, to be honest. And I haven't really delved into it too awful much. It looks like he's written some stuff in the past. He wrote like a couple of individual books. He wrote an issue of Nightwing. He wrote a little bit of Grayson. But again, these are kind of like books. He wrote a story in a Teen Titans annual. I really don't like annuals. But he wrote, I guess he wrote the entirety of Robin War.
Okay.
Which is collected in a collection of 256 pages in a book or whatever. But that's kind of from an era of DC that I don't really care about. Like, I don't really want to delve into that. I'm going to give DC I'm going to dip my toe in the water.
Yeah, give it just a don't dunk your head.
Well, I've always said before I made this kind of Tom King connection with Vision is that the only way I'm dipping my toe in the water is when they bring Justice Society back.
Oh, yeah.
And they have yet to do that. But like I said, the Tom King thing completely changes that. So I'm going to start buying Batman. And then that's probably a pretty good segue into another title, which is the first regular DC comic that I've bought in probably a decade or so. And I picked up the first four issues of Rebirth Supergirl.
Wow.
And that's honestly solely because of the TV show. And I've already said what we've talked about in terms of my DC history. And what's doubly crazy about this is that, like, I don't like Superman. I think he's an incredibly boring character who's infallible, unbeatable, except unless you give him a green rock or have magic. And there's not enough flaws or weaknesses for me to, I know it goes a lot deeper than that. I get that. It's just, it's too late for me to get into Superman.
So
it's really interesting that I've gotten into this Supergirl show as much as I have, because the primary thing, in my opinion, that really differs her from Superman so much is the fact that she didn't come here as an infant. She came here as like a preteen or a teenager already. So she's got all these vivid, strong memories of Krypton and has a much harder time like dealing with the fact that that's all done and gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
So the show's been awesome. I've been a huge fan of it. I might like the first season of that more. I think it's my second favorite of those DC shows in terms of first impressions, behind The Flash. And I think The Flash is about as good as those shows get. And I enjoyed that first season the most out of all four of them. And Supergirl is a very close second. I loved it.
Any idea who is writing Supergirl?
Supergirl, the names on the front are Orlando, King, and Atier. I don't know anything about the creative team. I don't know anything about what they're writing, what they've written, what they've drawn, etc. Apparently it's written by Steve Orlando, and it's drawn, well, no, that's a different name, so that's probably, I just kind of pulled this up on the web, but it's okay. Like, the first four issues are, I love the art. It's almost kind of it's a very vivid, colorful art style. And the storyline is different than the show. And this is the first time I'm kind of on the other side of stuff, because usually I'm like, well, this isn't like the source material at all. Like, this isn't anything like the original storyline that I know and love that people may or may not be bitching about with all these different DC titles. But for me, I'm just like, I want it to be more like the show. So finally, I'm kind of part of that aspect of things where maybe some people don't like this book because it's different from her original origins. For all I know, I have no idea, but it's okay so far. Like, it doesn't reach out and really grab me as much as I kind of hoped it would, but I'm probably going to give it a full two or three story arcs, a full 6 to 12 issues, you know.
Is that cover that I brought up, does that look anything like the first issue at all? I noticed we got Supergirl Mondays on CBS up there at the top, so it's got to be.
Well, dude, here's the thing. Like, DC has so many number ones of everything, you're never going to find the right one. And I mean, that's not additional knock on them. It's just another fact of the matter. You can't reset books every 9 to 15 issues.
Yeah, that's true.
It's garbage. I mean, it's total garbage. And that's another reason I've kind of given some of these DC titles another chance, is that I've heard a lot of good stuff about these Rebirth books. And that lends me a little more credence to the fact that maybe they won't just wipe it all away with a retcon in a year.
Yeah, cross our fingers.
I mean, if they do, I really can't think of anything that would let me try DC again. I mean, it's hard to put down money on a book if you know it's not going to matter in another few months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's written by Steve Orlando, art by Brian Ching, and colors by Michael Atier.
Okay.
And again, this is no knock on them. I just don't know. I didn't buy it because of the creative team. It's pretty interesting so far. It didn't reach out and grab me just yet, but love the art. Like, Brian Ching and Michael Audier, it's really solid stuff so far.
Good deal. Would you have ever seen yourself reading a Supergirl book?
Not in a million years. Seriously. Because before that TV show, and the only reason I watched the TV show is because the other three shows are really good. And I was like, well, this moved over to CW and they're going to tie them all together, which they did in this 4-issue Alien Invasion story arc, which was cool. And so I said, well, I'll give it a chance. And I watched the first two or three episodes, like, this is actually really good.
Yeah.
So, it's, and before this, I was just thinking, I was of the mindset that, well, I don't like Superman, and this is just a ploy to get female readers onto the brand. Mm-hmm. That's the way I saw it. And it's to be completely honest, there's obviously a lot of similarities, but in terms of the core origin of the character, it's really completely different.
Awesome.
Which is all the DC that I'm going to talk about, unfortunately. But it's like I said, you know, I'm dipping my toe in the water. I'm flirting with it right now.
When you get burnt, all right, you don't just run headlong into stuff like that with the, you know, mm-hmm. you just do exactly what you're talking about. Take it easy. See what you can handle.
Well, and it, you know, the pendulum, the seesaw, the pendulum might be kind of changing right now, because as far as I'm concerned, you know, like I said, I've always been a huge Marvel fan. I love Marvel. I think the vast majority of the things they've done the last 20 years has been really solid, especially since like the early 2000s. But man, starting with Secret War, I think the Secret War storyline itself was really cool. But all those Battle Worlds books, the vast majority of them just sucked.
Yeah, a lot of people did not like them.
And all the books that have come out since then, they reset things, and they sold Secret War like they were going to bring all the different dimensions, you know, the different Earths and all this stuff into one. There wouldn't be different alternate universes. That's not true. There's plenty of alternate universes still.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it turns out that the whole Battle Worlds approach was really just their way to try new storylines for 3 or 4 or 5 issues and see what ones the public liked so that they can keep them as ongoings afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bullshit. You don't sell a story arc as it's going to change everything and here's how it's going to change. And then after the story arc's over, that didn't happen at all.
Nothing changed.
You know, don't give spoilers. Don't ruin the storyline. But in terms of expectations for its impact, don't flat out lie about it.
Well, I mean, the couple things that I took from Secret Wars was, okay, we killed off Wolverine, but here's substitute Wolverine.
They did that with a ton of characters, though.
Yeah, yeah. And Miles Morales, they bring him in. We knew that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But
the thing is like, they didn't kill off Peter to do that.
That's
true. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, they brought Miles in because, dude, you can't get rid of Parker.
No, of course not. But you saw a lot of what you thought was going to be revolutionary and change the game.
Yeah.
And just,
which was really unfortunate, because I really liked the Secret War storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that they finally gave Doom his due. He was one of the last major villains that hadn't had this moment where he had finally got to the top of the heap, you know, and he was finally there, which is, while we're talking about it, might be another good segue into another title that I'm reading, which is Infamous Iron Man.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really good. So whenever I heard that they were going to do Infamous Iron Man, I was thinking, well, what does that even mean? And I saw that it was going to be about Doom and that Brian Michael Bendis was writing. And I was like, well, I don't even care what it's about. That's going to be on my pull list, because I don't remember if and or when Doom has ever had an actual ongoing.
I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. He might have had like a 4-issue limited or something.
If you're
going to
count,
80s.
I think if you want to count Doom 2099, where he was,
right.
I think that was actually Doom in 2099. He somehow got shot to the future or something like that. But dude, that's still, I've never read one issue of that book.
Right. So I was not really big on the 2099s, which is a completely different discussion.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Trust me.
But on top of that, Alex Maleev is doing the art. I've loved everything that I've ever seen him do. He did the art for the New Avengers Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
It was a one-shot, I guess it was. And now that I'm looking through it, there's really not a whole lot on here, but I feel like I was really, really comfortable with his name. But he did the art on like maybe 50 or 60 issues that him and Bendis did together of Daredevil.
Okay.
So they have an existing relationship. But back to the book, it's basically a storyline about Dr. Doom post-Secret War, where he's kind of fallen from grace. And, you know, he lost, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And his face is normal now, and he's a handsome regular person, but it's a completely mirror image Doom now. Like, he's actually trying to be a good guy. In issue 3, you find out his revelation was that, you know, he got the powers of a god in Secret War, and he still felt something was missing. He's like, this is everything that I've wanted. I've wanted to be a god. I've wanted dominion over everything. And I've wanted to smite the Richards family,
uh-huh.
which, if you recall in Secret War, like, he basically had the entire Richards family, aside from Reed, as his family.
Yep.
He had controlled their mind to basically make them his family. And he still did not feel like that was, he didn't feel like he thought he would feel whenever he got everything he wanted. So uh-huh. in issue 3 of this infamous book, you get a glimpse into his motivations, in that's how he saw Secret War. And he thought, well, if my desire for power and dominion and conquest didn't feel whatever it is I'm looking for, maybe I should work to do things to improve people's lives. So it's, so far, there's only been 3 issues out. I think it's a really interesting dichotomy for the character that I don't think would work unless he had what he had in Secret War. So I think it actually works.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's been this really cool piece where basically the Thing has found him a few times and just refuses to hear anything he says and just tries to beat the hell out of him. And so you've kind of got this thing where the vast majority of people that realize it's him, because nobody recognizes him, because he doesn't have the Doom mask anymore. Nobody really recognizes him, but the people that know it's him, like, they will not believe him.
I was going to say, did you ever read Superior Spider-Man?
Yeah, I think you had a few of those that you shared with me, and I read all of them, and it was a similar take
where it's Dr. Octopus is mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. Spider-Man's body,
right?
And proceeds to, I would say, wreak havoc, but not really. I mean, he
wanted to show that he was better.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what this reminds me of.
Well, the difference though is that Octopus, like, his motives were not, like, genuine. Like,
yes.
He was not out to be an actual good person. He was just trying to be better.
Selfish.
So he could be better than Peter.
Exactly.
The difference here is that so far in these first 3 issues, like, Doom seems 110% genuine that he really wants to be a better person.
Oh, wow. No, so it's nefarious motives, just like you said. It's
absolutely none. And he's the reason they're calling it Infamous Iron Man. No spoiler. We're not doing spoilers, right?
Yeah, that's fine. Don't if you don't want to, that's fine.
So I'll keep. So no spoilers from Civil War. But Tony's no longer around right now in the Marvel U. And whenever Doom saw that, he said, well, this is my opportunity to maybe take on a little bit of my flavor on the Iron Man aspect, and I can be a new Iron Man, and maybe people will give me a chance if I look like Iron Man. So that's why it's called Infamous Iron Man.
Gotcha.
Which might be, I'm trying to work these into smooth segues.
Nice.
So we were talking about the whole Dr. Octopus piece, and another book that I picked up on a random whim, because I used to buy Amazing Spider-Man, wasn't really big on it, dropped it, and then just this past week I bought and read the first 3 issues of Dead No More.
Okay.
This new Amazing Spider-Man clone conspiracy storyline.
Tell me.
And it's actually really cool. Oh. I'm liking it a lot. Which is weird given the fact that it's a Spider-Man storyline with the word clone in it. That usually is a pretty big red flag for readers familiar with the whole, 90s clone storyline that was garbage.
What's the concept here?
The concept is that it's still the Jackal. The Jackal is still the person behind the whole clones.
That guy.
But the concept now is that the Jackal has come up with a technology or scientific approach where he can reanimate people. They are and aren't clones, because he's taken DNA or pieces from the actual people that were dead and somehow tied it into this new process where they remember all of their old lives. So they're not just this brand new creature that looks and maybe acts like them, which is what the old clones did. They remember everything from the original character's life. They remember the death. They remember everything.
Oh, wow.
And so for all intents and purposes, aside from the fact that I guess it's a new biological entity, they are the person that died. And so the other interesting caveat, which is kind of a theme from the previous book that I was talking about, is like the Jackal has completely good intentions with this. He says whenever they're all revealed, there's a litany of different people that have died in Peter's life that are in this book and all show up almost all at once in the first couple issues. None of them, they've all been around for months. without anybody knowing. None of them have committed crimes. None of them are doing anything except for Jackal to try and pursue this process as a legit scientific undertaking to expose to the public at some time. But Peter is kind of like the thing was in Infamous Iron Man. Like, he refuses to listen to any of it, and he knows it's all garbage. He knows the Jackal's not a good person, and so he's out to stop it. And the last issue that came out, this is the cliffhanger to issue 3, is that Peter finds out that the Jackal has taken the body of Ben Parker and said that, Peter, you can have Uncle Ben back.
Oh,
and
man.
So that's at the end of it. And one of the other underlying pieces here is that the Scarlet Spider, Kane, is working with Spider-Gwen to stop all of this from happening, because they've seen the alternate Earths where this has happened and Peter always joins with the Jackal.
How in the world did they see, what are we talking, alternate Earths here? It's something that
It's like I was saying from Secret War. There are still infinite alternate Earths in the Marvel Universe, despite what they said was going to happen. So, but the thing is that Spider-Gwen exists in one of those alternate Earths.
She doesn't exist.
Yeah, she's on a completely different plane of reality from our standard Marvel Universe. In some of the books that she ties in with, Silk, the Spider-Men storyline that happened last year or what have you, she bounces around a lot. So I'm not reading Spider-Gwen. I thought it was on my pull list, but then about a month or two ago, I realized I haven't read Spider-Gwen in like 6 months. So I'm behind on that one. But apparently she's been bouncing around and sees this happening with Scarlet Spider and all these alternate realities. Every single one, the Jackal ultimately turns Peter, wins him over, and they join forces together with this. And basically, these pseudo clones become kind of zombies and destroy the entire planet in a certain amount of time. So they're trying to stop him. And so Peter's like, well, I would never. Like, this is the Jackal. He's clearly wrong. But like I said, at the end of issue 3, the Jackal's like, we can bring Ben back, and he's the exact same person. And so he's got this look on his face where you can tell, like, he's considering it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting. It definitely does not have the same feel of really what the hell are they even thinking about, like they did with the clone storyline.
Yeah,
clone saga.
You see the word clone on a Spider-Man book, and it carries such a negative connotation that I was not thrilled when I first saw. I never read anything about the concept itself. So,
well, one of the key, and this is kind of giving a little bit away, but at the same time, like if you know it's called Dead No More, the clone conspiracy, and you heard what I said a few minutes ago about the fact that they bring back a lot of people from Peter's past that have died, obviously, you know, they're going to bring the original Gwen back.
Yep.
And one of the things, she's kind of got a pretty big part in one of the issues where she's, and it kind of reiterates the whole difference about these clones, because she remembers everything that happened on the bridge. So there's a small little storyline, which is basically a several page flashback of her point of view of that whole day.
Oh,
so
wow.
She remembers when the Green Goblin came into her apartment, kidnapped her. She remembers waking up at the top of the bridge. She remembers watching Peter and the Green Goblin have that disagreement. She remembers getting pushed off the bridge, and she remembers feeling the web around her ankle just before her neck snapped.
Man.
So it's been pretty cool. Like, it's a pretty cool, interesting, different point of view from that really classic comic book moment in, you know, all of history, really. So here's the thing, too, though, is that ever since Secret War, whenever Amazing Spider-Man started over, and this won't give anything away, this was just my feel of how it started back. Basically, Peter was a CEO of this mega conglomerate. He was super successful. Everything was going great in his life. And I was like, this doesn't feel right, you know, because that's one of the underlying things of Peter is the fact that something always goes really bad. Like
Parker luck.
Yeah, he can't have anything good for a while. So me and another good friend of mine, Gibby, were talking about this, and he's a huge Spider-Man fan. And he's like, I like the book a lot. It's a nice different take on Peter's life. It's nice to see him happy for once.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were talking, and I was like, it's going to be really cool whenever whatever major Spider-Man story arc comes around and it just destroys all of it, because you know that's what they're going to do.
That's going to happen.
You know, like, they can't let him have anything, and that's definitely clearly what this storyline's about.
Yeah.
I started picking up Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows.
Okay.
Which was one of the very, very few Secret Wars Battle Worlds titles that I enjoyed.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, it's an alternate reality where Spider and Mary Jane are married, and they have a daughter, and she has all of his powers from birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that Battle World story, it was just kind of him facing off against this primary villain in that universe and really struggling with allowing her any leeway to do that. Because in this book, she's basically like tween, right? Like she's 11 or 12 or something. And so I guess, again, I guess that, you know, throwing that up against the wall, I guess it stuck with readers. So they started a new storyline with it. And it's enough of a different take on Peter that where he's happy and they're all kind of different spider characters. And even Mary Jane has her own costume. And it's just kind of interesting to see the fun quips that their daughter gives where you're like, yeah, that's Peter's daughter.
Yeah. when we at Tricon, I think it was Tricon, pretty sure. Yeah, it was Tricon. We went down there. There was a vendor, and me and you even talked about this because I think we did a Tricon wrap up show. Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, on the right hand side of the venue, there was this guy who had long boxes after long boxes of newer stuff for like a buck. Mm-hmm. And Renew Your Vows. The guy had Renew Your Vows all in there. For every issue except for the last one, which I thought it was only a 4-issue series. And turns out that is not the case. Yeah, I think it's a 5-issue series, maybe 6. But anyway,
yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I picked up all of them for a buck a piece.
That's worth it for sure. I mean, it's a fun storyline, I thought.
I just need to find that last issue and I think I'm good. But yeah, it was one I was able to find. I like Dan Slott as a writer. A lot of people give him some grief, but I enjoyed his run and what he did with Amazing Spider-Man.
He's still there. He's still doing it. He's not writing this main Renew Your Vows storyline now, but he's writing the whole Dead No More clone conspiracy thing.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
And then I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one, but I'm reading just the standard Spider-Man, which is the Miles Morales book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on issue 11, and I've got all of those. And that's also being the... Make sure I'm not telling you a lie right now. Yeah, that's Bendis is still writing that too.
Is he?
Yeah, which only makes sense. He's done all the Ultimate Spider-Man since day one. And it's a good book. So far, it's mostly, at least recently, just been directly Civil War tied in because Miles has not a major part to play in it, but a very relevant part to play in I'd say the last quarter of that overall series, and he's still kind of coping with that, and it's turned from that to his dad has the last issue is actually really just an issue about his dad. Like Miles is not really in it at all, but it's a good book. I like it real well. That's one of the few that has been going on for about a year consistently now that I've stuck with throughout the whole thing.
Cool.
And now I'm going to struggle because I don't know how many smooth segues I have left. But I've got a series of like just number ones that I've picked up as just giving things a chance because there have been so many new number ones.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the first issue of Champions, which is kind of a smoother segue because Miles is in that.
Champions.
It's a team up book. It's a new team book. It's got Miles Morales, Spider-Man. It's got the other Hulk. I can't remember what Amadeus Cho, right?
Yeah.
Amadeus really Cho awesome. Hulk. Yeah, yeah. It's got the young Nova. It's got the Miss Marvel crud. The young girl that is lives in New Jersey and she's from an Arabic Muslim family. Which that book is amazing. Like I have the first two trades of it and it was super good. So it's the four of them. There's, Scott Summers from the past.
Oh, which, the one from,
if you're not reading the all new X-Men, then that's completely outside of your realm of understanding, but I'm not even going to touch that. It's a young Scott Summers. Also, one of the really interesting reasons that I bought this too is the fact that it has, Viv, Vision's daughter.
Yes.
So she's in it too. And I was like, I'm so glad that they're taking something from that book and keeping it ongoing because there were a lot of things that happened in that book that were, again, if you were a fan of the Vision's history, there was a lot of important things that happened in that book. And there were a couple of deaths that were important. There was, and This will be my teaser for the book. There was a former Runaways character that died in that book.
Oh, goodness.
And I was just really glad to see that there's a character that they're taking on with a little bit more than just this, that 12 issue story arc. But it was good. I haven't really decided on if I'm going to add it to my overall pull list. But it was
fun. Cyclops like the de facto leader?
I only have issue one, okay. And it's really just kind of the story of how they all come together, and that whole organizational structure hasn't really been discussed or decided yet.
Okay, all right.
Hopefully this younger Scott sees stuff in this reality that doesn't make him come in and become an insufferable douchebag like our Scott did.
Please.
Holy crap, dude. I think Cyclops has been one of my least favorite characters of all time. What a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah. He rubbed people so many people the wrong way, and the way he was written. So many people were glad to see him get offed in Secret Wars. Wasn't it Secret Wars where he...
No, he actually...
He didn't live, did he?
Thank you for providing... Yeah, he did. Thank you for providing my next segue. They actually killed him off in Inhumans versus X-Men.
Oh, really?
Which is still going on. They're zero and number one. Maybe it wasn't in Inhumans versus X-Men, but it was either in one of these two issues or it was in the storyline that led up to this. But he was basically killed by the Terrigen Mists.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is verdict for me is still out on this whole thing, this Inhumans versus X-Men concept. I get it. I get what they're doing with it. I'm just really eager to see how it ends up to where the Inhumans' importance in the Marvel Universe, which they've clearly built up, how that's going to work out with how the X-Men are going to be going forward, because as the book is laying out, it feels like it's going to be one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an okay book. I'll keep reading Inhumans versus X-Men just to see how it ends up.
Going through some of the images of some of the covers for Champions just to get a good look.
I bought the one of the variants, which is this cartoony cover with all of them sitting around eating cereal and breakfast, and there's a gigantic box of cereal called Gwenny's on the table, and Gwenpool is popping out of it.
Oh, goodness. Gwenpool.
I thought that was funny. What else am I reading that I've only read one or two issues of that's a relatively new thing? I bought the new Hawkeye book, which is actually not a Clint Barton book, but it's the female that he teamed up with in his last book. Yeah, Kate Bishop. It's her book, and the thing that I love about it is that she has just moved to Venice, California, and there's a couple of, like, under-the-radar, kind of like West Coast Avenger-type jokes. And so, like, because she just moved to Venice, California, and she's kind of official the West Coast Avenger. And it's a very street-level, just like Hawkeye should be type, crime-type book. Like, she's dealing with, like just the stalkers of college students, and she finds out there's way too many of them, and there's some sort of mind control thing going on, and it's really just about her kind of setting out to become like her own unique character, which I want them to do, but I'm not sure how they're going to do that with calling her just straight Hawkeye.
Yeah,
because Clint's still around and is probably either in hiding or being hailed as a hero, depending on where he goes, if you read Civil War. Let's see, what other issue ones have I read? I just bought and read the first, like, number one of Thanos. That's been kind of, that was pretty interesting. His son, Thane, shows up and has a pretty big part to play in whatever's getting ready to happen. There's not really been enough happening in the one issue to where I can really say what's going to happen. Oh, man, what's his name? What's his first name? The guy that's writing it is writing Moon Knight right now. Jeff Lemire is writing it. And actually, I dropped Moon Knight. I was about four or five issues into it, maybe six issues into it. The first three or four issue story arc was cool. And then, like, it just felt like it was very disjointed and unrelated to much of anything, which I was kind of joking around with some of the folks that work at my comic shop. And I was like, what sucks about Moon Knight is that he's got like six or seven or eight different volumes, and they all get canceled, and none of them feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys working there is like, well, he has multiple personality disorders, so maybe that makes sense.
Well, I was going to say, they give free reign probably to do whatever they want on that character.
And they should, you know, they should. It's the way the stuff that he deals with mentally, that makes sense. And
yeah.
I'd never looked at it that way. But in terms of a cohesive storyline, it just doesn't work for me, unfortunately.
Was it you that were saying, maybe it was somebody else I heard that was talking about it, like when they were reading the story, they didn't know if what they were looking at or seeing happen in front of them was actually real?
And that's what I really loved about the first story arc of that, the Jeff Lemire run, is the fact that there were periods, and it was written obviously deliberately, where you didn't know if what was happening was actually real or if it was all in his head.
Mm-hmm.
That concept. Like, I like the whole idea of like a superpowered character or hero having like severe mental issues and it being written in such a way where you're not really sure what you're reading or what the point of view is. And that's also like the number one reason I'm so pumped about that Legion show on FX.
Can you do me a favor and just explain a little bit about that show? Because I've been seeing a lot of stuff. The first thing that pops into my mind is Legion from the X-Men.
And that's what it is. Yeah, that's what it's all about. It's all about David Haller. Yeah.
Wow.
So the story is all about David Haller. He's a mutant who's diagnosed with schizophrenia at an extremely young age. He's the son of Charles Xavier. God, is it Moira McTaggart? I think it is Moira. Yeah. So I think Moira's his mother. I don't know how deep they're going to get into his parents or his past, but in the TV series, he's apparently a young adult. So he looks like he's in his early to mid 20s or something like that. And I don't know if you read any of the issues of the Legion title, but I bought like the first four or five of them from the comic shop here in Albany for like 50 cents each, because I found them in their 50 cent bin and they had the first four or five, and I was like, this is worth $2.50. And that's also written in that same vein where you're not really sure what they're going for. The ads that I've seen for the TV show look awesome, because the people that are talking to him are kind of implying, are giving him these questions like he's kind of on a psychiatrist's couch. And they're trying to help him work through his issues and figure out which personality they're talking to, and if they can get David to work through that so he's not plagued by them.
Is there going to be a superhero element to this at all? Or
there's definitely going to be some sort of a power element to it.
Okay.
If in the TV ads, there's glimpses of scenes where things are clearly going poorly. And from the original character, again, I don't know how deep they're going to go into his power set, but he's basically like an Omega level mutant. Like, he's one of the most powerful mutants that has ever been in the comic books.
Yep.
He can basically do anything. And so
we talked about Age of Apocalypse last year, which was set off by Legion Quest.
Yeah.
So,
and so I'm kind of on the fence, because it's the whole Fox leniency with the Marvel brand. But I'm telling you, like, every single trailer or little 9 or 12 second, you know, social media blurb you see that they have, it looks really good. Like, it looks like they're really doing their due with regards to his schizophrenia, and they don't seem to be playing him off as evil as much as they do just very confused and not sure how the hell he's going to deal with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
It looks really cool. And unfortunately, I don't really have anything that I'm reading that's anywhere related to that, so I can't really smoothly tie that back in. But we were talking about some of the number ones that I've bought that I haven't really read anything else on. This title is several issues in. I think it's 4 or 5 or 6 issues in, but I've only bought issue 1 to give it a chance. But I bought the first issue of Unworthy Thor.
Oh, yeah.
And that's been written by Jason Aaron, who was writing the previous Thor book whenever Thor still had Mjolnir. And it seems like a pretty interesting story, too, because the female Thor now has Mjolnir. So she is the official Thor. And this is the story of, who we have always known as Thor, and how he's dealing with not being Thor.
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting. He's finally on his quest to find an alternate Mjolnir, which was thrown out into the Aether during some sort of one of the Battle Worlds books. That was kind of a cliffhanger in one of the Battle Worlds books, apparently. And now he's out to find this alternate Mjolnir. And he's also got a goat companion, which is awesome.
Yes, yes.
The first storyline that Jason Aaron wrote for the previous Thor book was really good. So I was like, you know what? I'll try the number one and see how that looks. And I'll probably buy the next few and see how the first story arc goes.
I've heard good things. I've not read, but Jason Aaron, man. He hasn't done a whole lot of wrong, I don't think.
I agree. I can't recall anything else that I've read by him, unfortunately, off the top of my head. But that first story arc for Thor previously was really good. And he's apparently written Thor and Ghost Rider and the Punisher Max series. I'm just not familiar with any of that. He has his own title called Scalped, which is apparently like 9 or 10 volumes in as far as trade paperbacks go.
Yeah, I've heard of Scout. I've not read that either. I forgot about Jason Aaron being on Ghost Rider. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but ended up getting a couple boxes of comics off of this guy who had collected pretty recent stuff. And I have a friend of mine who's heavy into Ghost Rider. So I said, hey, look, help me recoup the cost of some of these comics. I'll sell these Ghost Riders that I came across. So anyway, as I was dealing out the Ghost Riders to him, I started noticing the same name on a good bit of them. I was like, wait a second, is that Jason Aaron? Because this was shortly after I'd heard about the God Butcher saga Jason Aaron did.
That was the first story arc I was talking about.
Yep. And that was probably the first Thor that I ever read and really enjoyed.
Well, and it's funny that I said that I couldn't think of anything else, but he writes that ongoing Doctor Strange series.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I'm still buying that, and that's 15 issues.
That's awesome.
Which is a pretty high number of issues if you're looking at a current Marvel book. Unfortunately,
it is.
It's really good. That's worth every penny.
They all got to start somewhere, and they all end too frequently. It seems like
they really do. And we'll kind of close on that here a little bit later. But I'm still buying Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. We already talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still buying Doctor Strange. We already talked about that. I bought and read through all of the Civil War books. It kind of left me feeling wanting.
No,
it felt forced and unnecessary, and it felt like there was no real consequence aside from two major Marvel characters of all time are either dead or no longer in play, and it feels like there's no real reason for any of it.
Yeah, your sentiments are shared by many. I mean, I just listened to, again, I'm bringing up the Kapow guys. I just listened to them talking about that today and about how it wrapped up and it just felt like it was flat.
Who cares? Yeah, at the end of it, I was like, why? Why did any of this happen? And the other thing that it started off on the wrong foot because it felt like it was forced to tie into the movie, the Captain America Civil War movie, and it felt like basically kind of the exact same situation as Civil War with a different plot device between the two sides. There's this Inhuman who can see the future, and one side believes that the future that he sees will be, and the other side, it's just, shit, what's that Tom Cruise movie? Minority Report.
Yep.
It's literally Minority Report. Like, none of it felt creative enough to stand on its own. You know what I mean? Like, none of it felt like an original story. There were pieces taken from the original Civil War. It felt forced to tie in with the Captain America Civil War movie. There were pieces that obviously felt like it was pulled from Minority Report. Like, it just felt like a cavalcade patchwork quilt of different things that you'd seen or read.
It's already been done.
Yeah, exactly.
That's unfortunate. You want to Marvel was riding quite the high when it came to creative stuff. And then when Secret Wars hit, I think that really honestly was a turning point.
I agree.
Because a lot of people started really getting critical about what they were doing, all the shit that they were putting out there. Plus, you had storylines that were getting spoiled by issues of comics that had come out before
that was a big problem. That was a big problem. Like, stuff had come out, and that happened with Civil War. Like, there were issues of regular series that were coming out, and there's, like I said, there's a major character that dies in Civil War, and before that issue comes out, there are other mainstream stories that already talk about that, and you're like, well, I guess I know who dies in Civil War. Like, I really think that I agree with you. It was the Secret War that has been a potential major turning point for Marvel. And it's really unfortunate because that primary storyline was so awesome. Like, I loved it. Like, I felt like it was a solid story all around with Doom, with regards to how he got those powers and how he fell from grace afterwards. And it just felt like everything they did with the universe aside from that primary storyline with the other books, the Battle World stuff, was just garbage.
Yeah.
And ever since then, they do what people complained about DC doing. They rebooted after like an 8 or 9 or 10 issue run on titles and restarted them with number one. And some of those books that restarted with number one was a completely different storyline. And some of them picked off from the previous one. Mm. It was just so half-assed.
It was. As soon as that critical eye got focused, now it seems like they are, you know, they're taking some missteps. Their next big event, Civil War II, just like you said, I mean, it fell flat. So yep. It'll be interesting to see if they are able to recover. Of course, you know, they're raking in all this money from these movies. I don't know if they're really going to be too upset about their actual comics.
I agree. And I think that they might take a back burner, but I think that Disney hasn't got to where they're at because they take over a property and burn it to the ground.
That's right.
And I think they'll give the comic books. I think they won't touch the comic books. Dude, they didn't buy Marvel for the comics. They bought for the movies. And if they influence anything, it'll be in the movies. And they'll let the comic creative team do whatever the hell they want. Uh-huh. And that brings me comfort. But I mean, it's not worked out so far. I genuinely don't think that's because Disney bought. I don't think that the recent struggles, comic book storyline wise, are because of Disney. I think it's just a valley in the random peaks and valleys of each brand's strength.
I hear you.
I'm also reading the current Avengers book. I've always said that no matter what happens with Marvel, in a worst case scenario, if I get super peeved with Marvel, I'll still at least read the current Avengers book, and that will at least keep me tied enough into the overall universe. Uh-huh. Because if you're reading Avengers, you at least know. I mean, that's one of their top. It's probably their most relevant book. Uh-huh. To whatever their major storylines are. They're doing something in that book that kind of frustrates me too. They're only 2 or 3 issues in. They have actually technically there's like 4 or 6 books out already. And so let me explain. So there's a main storyline, 1, 2, and 3, which is the current Avengers team in a modern story. And there's also a 1.1, a 2.1, and a 3.1.
No.
It's stupid, dude. Nah. So these 0.1 books are old Avengers stories. So they're like back in the 60s and 70s type stories.
Okay.
And it's basically whenever the whole Avengers team was shattered and Cap had to redo it with Hawkeye, Quicksilver, and a Scarlet Witch.
Okay.
So they're completely different things, and I don't care. You know, like, I just don't care. That already happened.
It's already happened, you know, like, and it won't have any effect on the story.
So I bought the first couple 3, and it's kind of interesting because I like Scarlet Witch, I don't care. But I will not buy the point ones, but the main storyline's awesome. Like, it's been a Kang storyline.
Oh, yes.
It's all time travel, dude. You would love it.
Yeah, buddy.
You would really love it. It's all it's really interesting because it kind of starts off with the fact that the Vision goes off on his own, unbeknownst to anybody else on the team, and he kidnaps Baby Kang and takes him to an undisclosed period in time, has deleted where he left that baby from his memory in hopes that he will not grow up to become the Kang that terrorizes everything. And it bites him in the ass, and there's a big, huge load of problems that come on after that. And it's all time travel involved, and the new Wasp is involved, and it's a really good storyline. Like, any Kang storyline that I've read in the modern era over the last 10 or 15 years has been really cool.
For him being a character that travels through time, and that's pretty much what he does, I have not read anything with him up until like 3 or 4 years ago when I read Avengers Forever, which was pretty much Kang going back in time and plucking. Have you ever read it?
I can't remember. Like there was another like kind of Avengers title that started over at number one, and that primary storyline from number one was also a Kang story.
This was a 12 issue, I guess, maxi series, and Kang went through and plucked different Avengers from different timelines and put them together in order to fight, I guess, a future version of Evil Kang. So anyway,
I think I did read that.
Yeah, it was good. I did enjoy it for being 12, for being 12 issues. I was flying through it. I liked it a lot. I think it came out in the 90s, if I remember right. It could be maybe early 2000s, but anyway, yeah. So
I'll have to go back and find whichever Avengers title it was that I was just talking about. It was within the last 10 years or so where they started Avengers over numbering wise. And issue number one, the first story arc, was a Kang storyline, and it was awesome.
Which is
cool though. I mean, it's you would think that in general, a time travel story with all the different things you could do or get wrong in such a diverse universe as Marvel would possibly be pretty bad.
Yeah,
but they've been really cool. The two that I've read, including this one, which is, like I said, it's only three issues in, but it's been really cool.
All right, man. Was there another title?
So I have one last one.
I thought we had more.
And I planned this one as the last one on purpose, but I'm buying Great Lakes Avengers now.
Yes, I was going to ask you if you didn't bring it up.
And it's so good. Like, it's everything that I wanted it to be.
How many issues are we in now?
They're only on issue three right now.
Okay.
And so it starts out with so the original team that is left minus Mr. Immortal. So it's Flat Man.
Remember, we were throwing theories around as to what happened to him, weren't we?
I know. I'm waiting for them to kill somebody off, because every single Great Lakes Avengers storyline that's happened, somebody dies, and that's kind of the ongoing joke. It's really funny. but basically, Flat Man, Doorman, and Big Bertha get back together because through some legal loophole, the Great Lakes Avengers get their Avengers membership back. So they've been not a team and doing nothing all these years because the Avengers were like, you can't do this anymore. So there's some legal loophole, and they get the Avengers name back, and that motivates Flatman to get the team back together. So he puts the call out to everybody, and Doorman and Big Bertha come up, and they meet together, and now they're based in Detroit. They're waiting on Mr. Immortal to answer the call, and he never does. And they don't know where he's been all these years. And he was always hinted at or directly implied that he was kind of an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So in one of the issues, it might have been the end of the first issue, you find out that he is buried alive in a cemetery, and he basically has this 6-foot-long tube up to the surface, so that a friend of his can kind of talk to him every now and then. You don't know what really is going on.
What is that about? Yeah, that's weird.
Well, you basically find out that he buried himself alive with the help of that friend, because he's immortal. Whenever he dies, he just comes back to life. Like, he dies, but he comes back.
Okay.
So he has buried himself alive because that's how he chose to detox.
Oh, wow.
So that's okay. How he chose to get away from his alcoholism.
Wow.
And so his friend comes back every few days or whatever to talk to him a little bit, or give him some water or food just for fun, I guess. So in one of the issues, he's talking to his friend, and he's like, I'm detoxed. I'm ready to get out. He's like, no, you said a certain amount of time. He's like, but I'm good now. And he says, no. He's like, okay, well, I'm down here. He's apparently been down there for like 6 or 9 months.
Jeez.
So the only reason he gets out is because Doorman finds out that that's what he did, and he just goes down there and pulls him out.
Oh, wow.
The funny thing is that Doorman is easily the most powerful one of all of them.
Yeah.
So in the original introduction of him, his powers were that he could go through things, and people could go through him. If he was standing in a wall, if you will, people mm-hmm. could walk through him to go through the wall. So it's a really shitty power, right? Like, he can basically go through things. But over the years, he basically became an agent of a pseudo agent of the Dark Force dimension, which the Dark Force is kind of one of the Marvel, the omnipresent entities that are always around no matter what, like Galactus and all that type of stuff.
Yep.
But anyway, another thing to tie in what the Dark Force is, you know how the characters Cloak and Dagger?
Yes.
So you know how Cloak like has that cloak and he can transport through it and bring people into it and just send them to another dimension?
Mm-hmm.
That's the Dark Force.
Dimension. Yeah, the Dark Force.
So like it's this really unknown, untapped story element, in my opinion, as far as Marvel goes, that a really good writer could probably really develop.
Use. Yeah.
Pretty well. Anyway, he's basically an agent of that whole universe. So he's got a really unexplained power set that could potentially be pretty solid. So the story kind of delves in where he kind of gets out and he's back and he's kind of this wild card that doesn't really care. And Flatman is kind of like, I want us to be legit. This is our opportunity to be real Avengers. It's a really funny book. The way it should be. I mean, nobody takes this book seriously. I can't even recall if the guy that originally created, I mean, these are Jack Byrne created characters. This is not just the whim of Jack Burton. I think I said Jack Byrne, but yeah, these are John Byrne created characters from West Coast Avengers. And, I think he did it just as a, something to mix things up. But the guy that's writing it is Zach Gorman, and he wrote a series of Zelda web comics that were really popular for a good chunk of time. And I don't know if this might be his first dive into like mainstream comics or whatever, but
interesting.
It's really funny. Like it's a lot of fun. I have one more story, and I'll wrap this up, I swear. But
hey, by the way, is it Celestials or Eternals that you were trying to think of? What was the word you were trying to think of?
No, like Celestials and Eternals are part of this race. So like the Beyonder is one of them. You know what I'm saying? Like
yeah. Now I'm looking, man. I'm trying to find who it would be. The Celestials were the big things.
The cosmic entities, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, the Dark Force isn't a cosmic entity, but it's on this same level of, like, it's a whole other level of stuff.
All right. I'm backing away because I don't know. No, it was going to bug me, too.
I was thinking of cosmic entities, but it's not a cosmic. It's to be honest with you, the whole Dark Force thing is really unexplained. Like, it's really untapped as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the only person I knew that actually used it was Cloak. I'm fairly certain of. Mm-hmm, I don't remember anybody else that actually used the Dark Force dimension, unless it's
somebody right under my nose
that I just don't know.
But that's one of those things that I think we've mentioned this a few other times. Like, I love BC D-list characters and teams because they were probably created in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and it was a really lame storyline. People were like, this sucks. Nobody read it, and it got canceled. Whereas now, the story writing is so much better than it's ever been. Like, really good quality writers can come in, pluck up some random shitty team from a 6-issue story arc in the 70s and like write a legit backstory to them and make it cool.
Make them interesting.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I love like these BC D-list characters. Like the recent Alpha Flight storylines, like the Captain Marvel book before Civil War, that was basically an Alpha Flight book, and it was awesome. I mean, it was basically all about her, but she was leading Alpha Flight because Alpha Flight's goal now is not Canadian. It's basically to protect the entire planet from space. It was a cool book. But Great Lakes Avengers is fun. I mean, it is what it's supposed to be, and I don't know how long it's going to last, but I'm very glad that it's not a limited. It's planned as an ongoing. I'm sure it'll get canceled, but it's really good. And so I was in the comic shop last week, and there was this kid in there talking to one of the comic book folks that worked there. And like, he was just kind of ranting and raving, just having a huge blast being able to actually talk about, comics. And at one point he was like, yeah, like there's just so many books now that like you don't really know what's going on, and like, why are they actually writing them, and they don't make any sense to anything else that's going on. And like, he stopped for a second. He's like, Great Lakes Avengers. Who's buying Great Lakes Avengers? And I turned around. I was like, I'm buying Great Lakes Avengers. And he was like, really? I was like, yeah, it's awesome. And he was like, oh. And I was like, I kind of just told him what I just told you. Yeah. Why I like these B-list characters. And it's kind of like in the exact same vein of what they have done with Howard the Duck and Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, where it's just fun and funny. And it's not like some event level book that is going to make an impact on the overall power set of the universe going forward, but it's just a book for fun.
Exactly.
Like it goes back to the core comic books. It's just for fun and it's a blast. And he sat there for a second, he's like, well, okay, yeah, that's okay. Like so I was like, man, like I just got an opportunity to kind of protect Great Lakes Avengers from an 8-year old.
Me personally, I like taking a break from some of the heavy hitting, you know, the hard issue stuff. And Great Lakes Avengers, Howard the Duck, some of the other titles that I've been reading, I wish I could remember off the top of my head some of the other ones.
Howard the Duck also ended. That is no longer occurring.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, that came to an end. There's a new book coming out called Deadpool the Duck. I don't know what that's going to be.
Oh, geez.
I won't buy it, not because I'm opposed to it or offended by it. I'm not really intrigued by that whole concept.
Not big into it.
I was bummed to see Howard the Duck end. That was a crazy good book. And there was actually a lot of really big important things for the universe that were happening there that somebody can build off on later that didn't really impact other storylines. But like Howard had the power cosmic for a couple of issues.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a fun book. That was a lot of fun.
Jeez. But yeah, it's okay to take a break. And I think titles like that offer us something to enjoy. They may not be the most popular characters that are out there that Marvel's putting out, but still, the stories are good. So,
well, and like I said, like the vast majority of the things that we talked about tonight from a Marvel standpoint are all on issue 2 or 4 or 5. And there were very few books that I talked about that are on like double digits. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before we really dived into the actual series, in that I'm really on more of a fence with Marvel than I've ever been before. And I'm kind of doing this last ditch desperation grab for these number ones. Like I bought Thanos. I was like, that's a cool idea for an ongoing. I would like for that to work. But to be honest with you, I'm buying these in a desperation attempt to really rebuild my hope for the universe as a whole.
Try and save what little bit of enjoyment that you had for Marvel. Hopefully you can find something that does strike that.
It feels like it's on really shaky ground right now. And that really bums me out, because I know DC has that, but I just didn't grow up with that. So I don't naturally have that connection, but I do have that with Marvel, and I know what they've done and I know what they can be. And it really frustrates me to see it just be so disjointed right now, is the way it all feels. Like there are good titles, but like it feels like there's like 25% of all the titles are good, and the other 75% are just like really half-assed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, hopefully, I'm hoping, I got my fingers crossed too, man. I'm hoping they turn the boat around and people will start.
And you know what? Like I've never really given DC crap. Like I've always stated that I don't read DC just because of the last few years of the major story arcs and all the retcons. But I want that for DC too. You know, like I want all the DC books to be really good just as well. I want to buy the DC books. You know, like,
yeah.
But I just haven't wanted to buy them for so long. And finally, I'm buying Supergirl. The TV show is really good. And I know that's a very un-hardcore fan thing for me to say, but that's the way I approach, you know, that's what introduced me to it. And I'm excited for that. I'm really excited to start that Batman book because Tom King is amazing.
Have you heard anything about the JSA coming back? Has there been any rumors, or have you?
You know, I bug my comic shop folks probably every 2 months, like every couple 3 months. Like I said, I go in there every couple 3 weeks. So every 3 or 4 times I go in there, I'm like, have you heard anything about the JSA? Because in the original Rebirth book, the actual Rebirth number 1 or 0 or whatever it was, like the JSA was implied. Like there were direct mentions of the JSA in that. I bought that too. So every now and then, like I ask them about it, and they're like, "Yeah, we haven't really heard anything. Like we know Jeff Johns really wants to do that, but he's not really in the comics anymore. He's moved over to the movie making side of DC. He does nothing with the comics apparently anymore." So,
oh man,
yeah. So I mean, the second they do a JSA book, I'll buy it, and I really hope they have somebody incredibly upper tier write it, because that's like saying, were the Defenders the first Marvel team, technically, back in the 40s or whenever it was?
The Invaders, basically, I think.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, Invaders. That would basically be like Marvel being like, you know what? The Invaders never happened. Just forget it. Like, what the hell are you doing?
I know, dude.
And the fact that the JSA has included like 30 to 50 people over time, like, it has more of a legacy than the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
And they have basically said it never happened. It's the stupidest shit I've ever heard in my life. And then, plus, on top of that, like, the last time the JSA had its own book, it was amazing. Like, it's not like the last time they had a JSA book, it was subpar, and they were like, let's kind of sweep this under the rug. It was really bad. Like, the Geoff Johns run was crazy good.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
anyway, this is my quarterly JSA rant, I guess.
Well, again, I think I know there's a lot of other people out there that feel the same way you do, because I've heard it on other podcasts. I've heard it from the other mouths of people at my comic or the comic book store that I go to. They want the JSA to return. So, mm-hmm. You don't hint at it and then just sweep it under the rug. Although, well, it's been done.
we're approaching a year now, right? I mean, yeah. We're approaching a year since Rebirth, or eight.
May will be, I think it was, the first one was released in May.
Okay, so 8 months.
Yep, we're going to be.
So, we're kind of getting close there. I know they'll do something with it soon, but.
Just don't leave.
I mean, you know they have something mapped and planned out, and they wouldn't have done that in that Rebirth issue unless there's something.
Yeah.
So I really want that to happen because, I mean, there's very few DC properties that I have a connection with over the years just because of what I had with Marvel growing up. Green Lantern, JSA, and now some of these other, the show titles. Like, I'm really tempted to buy Flash, and now I'm buying Supergirl just to kind of introduce myself to the overall mythos of her. And I'm going to go back and buy some of the past trades that, you know, that my comic shop folks can recommend too. But
yeah,
I just want that to happen. I'll keep complaining about it on every podcast we do that's comic book related, I'm sure.
That's all right. That's all right. Well, Josh, man, I think we have covered the gamut. I want to thank you for coming on here, being the first guest here for Watch Your Reading 2017.
Thank you. I have a blast talking about comics. I know that, you know, it's something we're obviously really passionate about and we really love talking about. And hopefully some folks will listen and they'll be interested in listening to it and talking about it next time we have a call in. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe actually put something on the pull list themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
You want to plug anything, dude?
Not particularly. I mean, I'm on Twitter at Red Parallax. I don't really have anything themed that I do on there. College football season, I'm talking a lot about Marshall University football, probably getting ready to transition into Chicago Blackhawks hockey season for me, although we don't have center ice, so I don't get a chance to watch a lot of it. It's usually just stupid jokes and making fun of stuff, really. I don't really have much to plug. I don't really do anything in the grand sphere of things worth mentioning, unfortunately.
Do we have anything planned with you here coming up anytime soon, either on my show or on Ronnie's?
I'm sure we do, but I know you're booked out for 4 or 5 months, right? Like, I think I'm on there somewhere, but it was so far off that I don't even remember, to be honest.
I can't remember either. I know that, well, yeah. Well, at some point, I know you're going to be showing back up. Let me see. I might just head on to Trello real quick.
When's the next Marvel movie coming out? We'll do something for that for sure.
That's Old Man Logan.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's March, right? That's
mm-hmm.
March.
Now, are you a fan of that book, or were you?
I hated it.
That's right. That's right.
I hated that book. Yeah, yeah, I actually really hated that book.
That's what I thought. We got.
But man, the trailers look awesome.
We've got
the trailers look really cool, and I love the fact that they're bringing Laura into it. That looks really cool.
Iron Fist. Weren't you up for Iron Fist?
Yeah, I'm okay. Pumped for that. Yeah.
Okay, that's going
to
be the end of March.
Luke Cage.
Really?
I'm probably 2/3 of the way through it.
I can tell you that you.
I like it, but
yeah, it does not feel. Now, I'm not going to spoil anything for you.
I will finish it.
I finished it. I think it took me about a week and a half. But of all the, you know, we've had this discussion. I think it was on Screaming Boy where of all of them, I think this was the weakest one. So, but as you could tell, I mean, if it was really, really, really good, I consider the second season of Daredevil, of course, that had the Punisher in it. But that was one of my favorite seasons so far that Netflix has done.
I mean, honestly, I think everything else they've done has been really just as good as all of it. Like I liked Jessica Jones almost as much as I did
either
season of Daredevil.
It was good.
I mean, it was really good. And both those seasons of Daredevil were probably equally to each other for me. Like that, yeah. The first one, I think I liked it. The second one was probably better, but the first season I liked probably just as much, just because that was the first time you saw it all, and you're like, wow, this is really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway, so Iron Fist, Living Weapon, mm-hmm. That's supposed to be sometime near the end of March. I'm sure we'll record sometime prior to that. But yeah, we'll be covering that for this to coincide with the series. That's going to be getting released on Netflix, I think, around that same time. So I guess we'll be having you on then. I'm sure I'll be talking to you. I know I'll be talking to you online and on Screaming Boy as well. So I guess let me go ahead and quickly plug that if you guys get a chance, go give the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like. Stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. Also, the Source Material Podcast does have its own Facebook page now. Oh, my goodness, it's taken 2 years, and I finally said, okay, I'm going to make my own Facebook page. So I put that on there, and, just keep on – I usually try to keep it related to comics and then just post the stuff about the show. So if you guys give that a like, stay up on top of all the great podcasts that Source Material has to offer as well. Other than that, I'm Jesse Starcher. That's Josh Calandros. Thanks again, Josh, for coming on here. We're going to get out of here. Talk to you.
My pleasure. Later. Thanks for having me. It was awesome.
And there it is. Our first entry into 2017's What You're Reading special is complete. Special thanks to Josh Calandros for coming on the show and sharing his thoughts on what he has been keeping up with in the world of comic books. This Friday, catch our second episode in this special series as I interview three former guests of the show. Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy podcast, Mark Rattlitch, the patriarch of the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network, and Cliff Barnes joins us of the Mickey Bars podcast and Kapow, the pop culture podcast. They all show up to talk more about the books they have their eyes on. So until then, everybody, have a good one! Fireball! Magic weapons!